But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal to everyone. In that sense, he has no enemies and no friends. Everyone is enjoying the fruitive reactions of his own work, and the Lord within everyone's heart is observing and giving everyone the desired result. However, just as the devotees are always anxious to see the Supreme Lord satisfied in every way, similarly, the Supreme Lord is very anxious to present himself before his devotees. Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya sadhuna vinashaya chatushkritam dharma samsarpanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. Thus, Krishna's appearance is for the deliverance and satisfaction of his devotees. Actually, he does not advent himself simply to kill the demons, for that can be done by his agents. Lord Vishnu's appearance at the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Nabi was just to please the king and his assistants. Otherwise, there was no reason for his being present there. Now, I'll read the translation purport of text 11. Translation. Dear Lord, all the great sages who are thoughtful and saintly persons incessantly recount your spiritual qualities. These sages have already burnt up all the unlimited dirty things and by the fire of knowledge strengthened their detachment from the material world. Thus they have attained your qualities and are self-satisfied. Yet even for those who feel spiritual bliss in chanting your attributes, your personal presence is very rare. Purport. The priests in Maharaj Nabi's sacrificial arena appreciated the personal presence of the Supreme Lord Vishnu and they considered themselves very much obliged. The Lord's appearance is rare even for great saintly persons who have become completely detached from this material world and whose hearts are clean due to constantly chanting the glories of the Lord. Such persons are satisfied by chanting the transcendental qualities of the Lord. The Lord's personal presence is not actually required. The priests are pointing out that the Lord's personal presence is very rare even for such elevated sages, but that he was so kind to them that now he was personally present. Therefore, the priests were very much obliged. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupam Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Sapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. So, welcome to the Saturday morning Bhagavatam class. We are reading currently from the Canto 5, Chapter 3, Rishabhdev's appearance. In fact, Rishabhdev has not yet appeared in the story currently. So, his father, King Nabhi, there are Brahmanas who are performing a sacrifice in order to invite the Supreme Lord as Maharaj Nabi's son. So that is the background. And here we see that the Brahmanas are the saintly people are praying to the Lord that you have arrived at a sacrifice because you have your arrival itself is a benediction and you have bestowed upon us the most valuable benediction by coming here. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about, he basically quotes Bhagavad Gita 9.29 and also 4.8. Because it is Rishabhdev's appearance. So, Prabhupada quotes Paritrayana Sadhuna Vinashaja Dushkritam Dharma Samstarpanarthaya Sambhavami. So, as a theme for today morning's discussion, I am going to speak about this dharma samstharpanarthaya. That is, the Lord comes to re-establish the principles of religion. So we are going to see dharma samstharpanarthaya in the context of, you know, this the fifth canto itself, and also in the context of, you know, tomorrow is Vamanadev appearance. So we are going to see dharma samstharpana in that context, and also in general, whenever the Lord advents, how does he come to re-establish religion? So that is the theme that I would be touching on today, because that is the theme of this particular chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. So I would begin by saying that the Lord basically appears, when we say dharma samstharpanarthaya, he comes to establish a favorable kshetra so that one can do dharma. So just like in Bhagavad Gita, we know the first verse of Bhagavad Gita is dharma kshetre. So dharma kshetre kurukshetre. So dharma kshetra means a place where one can perform dharma properly. Because if that kshetra is not there where you can do dharma, then you actually cannot do anything. Okay, so I'll start with the story, okay? And then we will go into analyze this dharma kshetra concept. So for example, tomorrow is Vamana Dwadashi. And if you go into the details of the Srimad Bhagavatam as to why Lord Vamandev appeared, it is very clear he appeared because the kshetra of the devatas was lost. Right? So the story in the 8th canto is that after this Samudra Manthan Leela, Bali Maharaj was actually dead. But Shukracharya got him back to life by his power, and he installed him as the king. And Bali Maharaj worshipped his spiritual master well, so he had tremendous strength. And when Bali Maharaj and all his associates went towards the Swargaloka to, you know, kind of challenge Indra, Indra, when he saw the might of Bali and all the people that have come along with him, he actually got scared. He approached his guru Brihaspati and asked, what should I do? So he said, better to quit this place now. So what happens is that Indra as well as all the devatas, they leave their heavenly planets and they go into hiding. And when that happens, obviously Indra's mother is very, very disturbed, Aditi. And she approaches her husband, Kashyapa, and says that, please do something because my sons are suffering like this. They have lost their place. Right? And when that happens, Kashyapa Muni suggests to her the method of worshipping the Supreme Lord, Payovrata vow. And Aditi follows that vow very carefully, and then we know that Vamanadev appears as her son. In fact, when Vamanadev appears as Aditi's son, he comes for the main purpose of giving the devatas back their kshetra. Right? So the devatas had lost their kshetra to Bali, but that kshetra had to come back to them. Right, so for that purpose he comes. In fact, if you see in the 8th canto Bhagavatam, when Vamandev comes, he addresses his would-be mother, that is Aditi, by saying that, O Devi, I can understand that you want to regain your sons and be together with them to worship me after defeating the enemies in battle and retrieving your abode and opulence. So basically the abode of the devatas was lost and that had to be retrieved back, so that the devatas could be situated in their abode and then they could render service to him. So let's look at this particular theme, why the Lord comes to this world. He is coming because the place was lost, the kshetra was lost. Because every individual in this world, he can operate only in a particular kshetra. So that kshetra could be the house, it could be the place where you work, it is, in one sense, even the dress where you wear is a kshetra, because there is a comfort in the particular clothes that you wear. Only then you can, you know, do something. Just to give a very simple example, you know, if I'm wearing my son's kurta, you know, who is much smaller than me, I would not be able to do my devotional service or activity, because in that particular kshetra, the clothes of, you know, something that doesn't fit my body correctly, I'm constantly disturbed or agitated, thinking that, how am I sitting like this with a wrong set of clothes? correct. So that's a very simple example, but kshetra basically literally means place, field, the field of activity. And if a person's field of activity is absent, then he cannot do anything. That is the theme actually. So that's why when Krishna says dharma kshetra, without the right activities, you cannot do anything. You are helpless. So all the devatas, they had lost their field of activity. And to take away somebody else's field of activity is considered adharma. So let's understand this. So Bali Maharaj, so the heavenly planets were allotted to Indra to rule. But Bali Maharaj, by his prowess, he actually frightened of Indra. And Indra actually lost his kshetra. Indra and all the devatas, they lost their kshetra. And without their kshetra, they were obviously disturbed. Because even to do your devotional service, you need that platform, that kshetra on which you will operate. Without that platform, nobody can do anything. It's a good thing. Right? So that is the Vamadeva appears. So now, similarly, if you see all the other avataras also, it would always be connected to dharma and kshetra. And that is actually dharma samsthapana. Like for example, if you see Varahadev, right, the first incarnation in this particular day of Brahma is considered Varahadev. Now, why did Varahadev appear? If you see the immediate cause of Varahadev's appearing, it is because Bhumi Devi, which is the kshetra of so many people to live and do their activities, was dislodged from its place and had fallen to the bottom of the Garbhoda Sagar. And this basically happened because of one person's adharma. And that person was Hiranyaksha. Right? Out of greed, he had usurped the kshetras of the Pandavas. And that was unacceptable. Right? Good, he died. One thing is that Arjuna, you are protected. And second thing is, I myself would have killed the next dharma and kshetra in order to understand the Lord's appearance in this world. Right? Because as I said, the Lord comes to establish a dharma kshetra. And whenever the kshetra has been affected, he will come to this world. And we see that everywhere. Like I gave already many examples of Varahadev or Narasimha or tomorrow Vaman appearance, even Krishna, even if you see Matsya avatar, he basically came at the time of annihilation. Again, it is related to kshetra. You know, because that entire place is destroyed. Now again, a srishti has to be done. Things have to be protected. He again comes to establish a kshetra. So this is how the Lord comes actually, if you see. This is one of the core things, which is the reason why the Lord comes. So let's go back to a little bit to the definition of dharma. So as I said earlier, dharma is such an amazing terminology. Okay, so one way dharma is defined is the standard, the Vedic definition of dharma is done in the form of these three items. There is satya, rita and dharma. Right? So satya means the unmanifested truth. Rita means the manifested truth. And dharma means to submit to the manifested truth. So, it's a very simple definition. But this is generally the Vedic Upanishadic definition of dharma. This is basically to submit to Rita. So, simple example, like Rita means like Ritu. Like we say in Sanskrit or Hindi, we say Ritu. Ritu means seasons. So, as the seasons change, we submit to that change in season. Correct? So for example, there are certain crops that grow in some seasons. So that is the rita. So we have to submit to it. Right. So nowadays we see that perhaps using some chemicals and artificial methods, person may grow a mango tree even in some winter or something. But that is actually considered a dharma because you are not aligning with rita. So dharma means to align with rita. Just like simple example, why it should we get up in the morning? We get up in the morning because as per rita, the morning time before sunrise, one should rise. Right, in the Brahma Muhurta hour, one should rise. Why should you rise in the Brahma Muhurta? Because that is how the rita has been made. So it is seen that those who keep sleeping in the daytime, it's not good for their health even. It's adharma. Why it is adharma? Because you are not submitting to rita. Rita means this manifested universe. You are not submitting to the laws of the universe. You are violating the laws of the manifested universe. Hence, it becomes adharma. So simple thing, like getting up late in the morning, actually becomes against rita, hence it is adharma. So similarly if you see, why is abortion, let us say, adharma? Abortion is adharma because it is against rita. What is rita? The way the Supreme Lord has created this world is the mother takes care of a child. Even we see a cat, a dog, a tiger also will take care of the child. That is Rita. That is the manifested reality of this material world, which is as per Krishna's design. So you have to submit to that reality. So suppose if a mother says that, no, I will not take care of my child, rather I will kill the child in the womb itself, then it becomes adharma, because you are going against the laws of the manifested reality. Simple example, right? Okay. So similarly, so we can see so many examples actually like this. I mean, let's take the fundamental story of Mahabharata, Draupadi Vastaharan. Why is Draupadi Vastaharan, why was it adharma? Simple reason. Because it's a woman, and a woman has to be protected by the elder. So that is Rita. So Rita also means how, this entire universe and the systems are arranged. So Bhishma, Drona, all elderly people are sitting, and in front of them, you are disrobing a woman. So everybody does adharma. Why they are doing adharma? Because submitting to the Rita means they have to submit to the laws of the universe. And the law of the universe is one must protect the weak, especially if you are a Kshatriya. You must protect the cows, the Brahmanas, the women, the old people, children. And if you are not ready to protect them, and in front of your eyes a violation is taking place, then you do adharma. Because you are going against Rita, you are going against the laws of the universe, where you are not acting the way you are supposed to act. Okay, so these are very simple examples of what is dharma, right? So similarly, dharma also, for example, means in a very simple sense, as per Rita. Now again, we are connecting dharma to Rita, right? So dharma in connection with Rita also means that as the generation becomes older, they give control to the new generation, young generation. Because the young generation is also supposed to do something. If the old generation only keeps everything with them and doesn't give anything to the young generation, what are they going to do then? So that again becomes a dharma, because you are going against the laws of Srishti and everything. Correct. So simple example, right? So for example, Hiranyakashipu. What was the adharma of Hiranyakashipu? Hiranyakashipu wanted to become permanent in this mortal body, and that is against the laws of Rita. Because the way the Rita is made in this universe is that nothing is supposed to be permanent here. Everything is supposed to be temporary, right? From Brahma's abode to Patal Lok, everything is supposed to be temporary. So in this temporary world, if somebody comes and tries to make a permanent arrangement like Hiranyakashipu, then that becomes adharma, because you are going against Rita. You are going against the reality of this universe that we are not permanent in this world. We are temporary. We just come and go. So that being the reality, we can't make an arrangement as if I am going to stay here forever. So then that actually becomes a dharma, like Hiranyakashipu's adharma. Or in a more simplistic sense, even if, even somebody at home, let us say an old mother-in-law, she has become very old now, but she is not giving control to the daughter-in-law to do things. And she says that, no, till I die, I am only going to be in charge. In one sense, that again becomes a dharma. Because you have lost your relevance now. You are so old. And you have to submit to the Rita that now you are old, so just focus on higher principles of life. Chant and do some spiritual activity rather than getting into the nitty-gritties of how to manage the money and how to manage everything. Because that's none of your business now. There is a younger generation who wants to take over. So you can't keep sitting with all the control in your hands. So wanting to control beyond one's quota of time is also a dharma, correct? Because one of the fundamental realities to the material world is everybody becomes irrelevant. And at the right time, one has to know when I have to push back and give control to anybody. I mean, just to give an example, and maybe it's more in jest, but there is a beautiful story in Chaitanya Bhagavat about how Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, there is a dream that Satyamata has. There is an offering that is sent to the deities of Krishna Balaram, and Krishna Balaram are eating it, and Chaitanya and Nithai are coming and fighting. And Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are fighting with the Krishna Balaram, and they are telling them that your age is over now, Tumloka time ho gaya abhi, right? It is our time right now. So this is our offering. And they have some, joking words exchange, etc. Those joking, in that context, you see even the point that as if, at least the way Nityananda Prabhu speaks to Balaram, in that particular dream of Satyamata, it appears as if even an avatar, has a particular time period for which he is. So that's why basically Nityananda Prabhu is saying that it is our time now, because it's यू नो दिस इज कलयुगा एंड वी हैव कम राइट नाउ, ये हम लोग का टाइम है अभी, आप कहां अभी आ गए. सो बेसिकली दैट्स मोर इन जेस्ट बिकॉज द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड इज एटर्नल एंड हिज कॉन्ट्रीब्यूशन इज एटर्नल. बट so the point here is that dharma also means not to impose oneself beyond stipulated time. So this is all dharma. So that is why we see dharma kshetra. So similarly, if you see, you take any example, then we can apply this concept and understand adharma. Let's take one controversial example. Let's take from Ramayana. So in Ramayana, we see that our you know, there was this shudra who was trying to do tapasya to go to heavenly planet, correct? And he was not only trying to go to heavenly planets. The Ramayana very clearly says that he wanted to conquer over heavenly planets. Uspe vijay prapt karne ke liye he was doing it. So that is again adharma, because you are going against the Buddha. There is a manifested reality of heavenly planets, and there are certain systems in which things are done. Now if you go against those establishments and you try to do something, then it becomes adharma, because you are trying to make the rules of the universe topsy-turvy. Something like what Hiranyakashipu did, where you know he made things topsy-turvy in terms of rules and benefits of karma, etc. So anything like this is called adharma. So I think till now we have tried to make one attempt to describe this one word dharma in a very brief. So many ways we could describe it, but very briefly speaking about dharma. I basically said dharma is to submit to rita, right, which is the laws of this world. And these are so many examples of when you do adharma. Basically, when you go against the laws of nature, you do adharma. So like that, right? Now let's come to kshetra. So this is actually the main thing here. So what is kshetra? Kshetra means place. Literally, it means space. Okay, so in fact, kshetra not only comes in Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, first verse, dharma kshetra. It is also coming in the 13th chapter. If you see the 13th chapter, Nature, Enjoyer and Consciousness, Arjuna's opening question is, he's asking about what is Prakriti, what is Purusha, what is Kshetra, what is Kshetrajna, and so on. Right? And I'm just reading the translation from Bhagavad Gita. Supreme Personality of Godhead says in 13.2, this body of son of Kunti is called Kshetra, field. Prabhupada translates Kshetra as field in Bhagavad Gita. And one who knows the body is called the knower of the field. So Kshetrajna means one who knows the body. And in the third verse, Krishna says, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi. I am also the knower of the body. You know, because Krishna is the super soul. He is there in every body. He knows every body. And he says, I am also the knower of this body. And to understand the body and the knower is called knowledge. Kshetram Kshetrajnayor jnanam yatta jnanam matam mama. Can you imagine? Even to understand one's own body, one's own kshetra, Krishna is calling it as knowledge. That means you must understand your own kshetra, and you also need to understand yourself, the kshetrajna, and that is actually knowledge. So what does it mean by saying that I should understand the body? Kshetra ko samajna kiska matlab kya hai? So simple thing. So understanding the kshetra means let's start from basic. And let's elaborate this concept. So as I said, kshetra means, literally it means space. It means, you know, field of activity, correct? And everybody needs space. Like children need their place to play. Elderly people need their space to do things. Even renunciants need their place, right? I mean, when we go to Vrindavan and all that, we go to various bhajan kutir of Babaji. And it is not that four or five Babajis have one bhajan kutir. They have their separate bhajan kutir. No, bhajan karne ke liye bhi aapko space chahiye, aapka khud ka bhajan kutir chahiye hota, right? So all these Babaji's also, if you see, I mean, in Vrindavan, if you see, you go to Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami. Now there is a bhajan kutir for each of these great personalities. It's just because you need it. You need that kshetra where you can do your thing. So literally it means space. It means field of activity. And to know that also, so now this is again interesting. So Krishna is saying in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I need to know my kshetra, I need to know my field. Okay, so just like we take the example of Hanuman in Ramayana. Hanuman was not aware about his kshetra, correct? I mean, the story in Ramayana is when they all go, you know, when they have gone to the southernmost tip of Bharata and they want to jump and go to Lanka, Hanuman is not aware of his kshetra. He doesn't know that he can jump. All the other monkeys are aware of their kshetra. So please remember, in Ramayana is very beautiful. Every monkey says that, you know, one monkey says, I can jump 5 yojanas. One says, I can jump 10, I can jump 15, 20. You know, then there is one monkey who says that, I think it is Angad or someone who says that, I can jump, I can reach there, but I'm not sure whether he can come back. So all the monkeys know what their body is capable of accomplishing. So beautiful it is. Basically, it means that they have a knowledge of their kshetra. And please remember, this is, Krishna calls this as knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't say, oh, this is material, you just know your body, think about it. No. Even though it is your body, currently you are going to act in that body only. So you need to know your kshetra. But it's only Hanuman who has forgotten. You know, there is that curse. Hanuman bhul gaye unka kshetra. You know, what his kshetra is capable of accomplishing, Hanuman has forgotten. Because he has forgotten what his body is capable of accomplishing, you know, Jambavan, he reminds him that, hey, Hanuman, you can do it. And then when he reminds him, as per the benediction along with the curse, Hanuman suddenly remembers that, oh yes, I can do it, why not? I can buy 100 yojanas, I can jump 10,000 yojanas, he says, I can jump to any corner of the universe. And then we know that, you know, how he accomplishes what he's supposed to do. So the point is, there was a knowledge about the kshetra in every monkey. Okay, there was a knowledge about the kshetra. Okay. And now the question is, why is this important? Somebody may say, kyun mujhe samajhna zaruri hai mera kshetra? Answer is simple. Unless you know your kshetra and what your kshetra is able to accomplish, how will you do anything constructive sitting in this kshetra? Right? And if we cannot do anything constructive sitting in this kshetra, then how we connect that to Krishna? Because if you see the goal of life as bhakti yoga also, in order to connect it to Krishna, the service that you can offer, first of all, you should know how much you are capable of accomplishing. Correct. And unless you know how much you are capable of accomplishing, how do you know what can I do for Krishna? So you don't know. And in fact, you cannot even operate. So that's the point. So if you see the whole Bhagavad Gita, it is all about that. Arjuna, the Pandavas had lost their kshetra to the Kauravas. And Arjuna is not ready to fight. You know, because he is afraid that how can I kill Bhishma, Drona, etc. And he is saying that, okay, you know, I would rather beg, and all that he's saying in second chapter. Krishna is not impressed at all. Because Krishna knows very clearly that Arjuna cannot do this. Arjuna bol raha hai, sir, main bheek mangunga karke. Lekin Arjuna ka wo nature nahi hai. Uska kshetra ka, you know, nature ye nahi hai ki bheek mangega. He can't do that. So basically that is why Krishna is repeatedly telling him, no, you have to do what your nature is. And you can't change that. Okay. So let us note that nobody can change their kshetra. See, we can only change our bad habits. So let's say I am lazy. I can work to change my laziness. That I can do. But my kshetra I cannot change. Okay, so that means if somebody is primarily a Vaishya in his kshetra, he cannot become Brahman. He cannot do that. And we know stories like, you see, Vishwamitra is the only rare story where he changes that whole kshetra. But that also we know that it was never very easy. Because what a story it is, Vishwamitra's story. My God, what all he has to do in order to become Brahman? You know, if you look at it, it seems that he was better off as a Kshatriya. I mean, he had to work, he had to do so many things in order to, you know, just get the certificate that his Kshetra is now the Kshetra of a Brahman. Asan nahi tha uske liye, correct? So sometimes, you know, most of us, so one very important thing in the Kshetra discussion is, we should never think of which kshetra is better. We have to think what is our kshetra. So, you know, so just like if you see fish, the kshetra of the fish is water. It is not that because milk is superior to water, the fish thinks that I will now reside in milk. You know, so I think yesterday and day before when Maharaj Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj was giving class, there was a lot of discussion about which ashram is better and all that. You know, so it's an age old discussion within society. So, Maharaj, of course, explained so nicely, just one point they were saying today. So even let us assume that the kshetra of the renunciant is, you know, in some way superior to that of a family man. Let's assume like that. But the point is, that is not important. What is important is, where am I fitting? Where is my kshetra naturally? Correct. I mean, if I am a fish, then I have to be in salt water, the ocean. Right, I can't say that Deshi Gai Ka Doodh is better than salt water. So put me in a pond of milk of Desi cow. No, I'll die because that milk may be purer than water, but you know, that's not my kshetra. So this is why understanding of kshetra is very important. Bhagavatam also, you see, I mean, just to give another example, if you go to the third canto, when Lord Shiva was born, when Rudra was born, first thing Brahma did is give him a kshetra. He gave him a name, he gave him a place to reside, that is kshetra. Unko jagah diya, tum yahan yahan rahoge and ye kaam karoge, right? Because only when that is given, then you can start doing. So what we are basically saying is, when it is very clear to us what our kshetra is, then we can contribute. Then I can contribute. So that is what Krishna wants Arjuna to do. Krishna wants Arjuna to understand. Of course, Arjuna knows he is a kshatriya. Arjuna doesn't have confusion about his kshetra. But he was reluctant to act according to that kshetra. So the whole Bhagavad Gita was told by Krishna so that Arjuna goes back to that kshetra and does things like that. Because then only he can connect that to Krishna and render a devotional service. Arjuna cannot say that, now I will beg. I can't do that. He can't suddenly become a beggar. It's just not possible. He will have to work according to, you know, what his kshetra is. Correct. And if anybody tries to take somebody else's kshetra, that becomes adharma. Okay, so this is the connection between dharma and kshetra. If you take away somebody else's kshetra, or in a more literal sense, if you don't allow somebody to perform their activities, what they are actually capable of doing in their natural environment is actually a violence to them. And it is to set right that adharma, one of the reasons that Krishna comes again and again. Right? As we already said, like Bali Maharaj's story and so on. Right? So basically, going a little bit more into the concept of kshetra, we see here that, you know, just like, you know, when Arjuna, it is said when he was going to the heavenly planet, to Swarga, he offers his obeisances to the Himalayas. And very beautiful prayer he says. He says that, my dear Himalayas, your lap is the tapo bhumi for sages. He offers his respects like that. That is the thing. Even when Ram, if you see in the Ramayana, when Lord Ram is about to leave Ayodhya, he prays to Ayodhya. He prays to Ayodhya, please remember, that Kshetra Ayodhya, he prays to her, saying that, please let me come back and meet you again. You know, it's the land to which he is bowing down, Lord Ram. Or Lord Chaitanya when he says Bharata Bhumi Trahoyala Manushya Janma. Right. So the whole point is that the Kshetra is a vehicle. Yes. It's not a destination. It is a vehicle only. But the vehicle is not ultimate. Correct. The vehicle is not ultimate. But rejecting the vehicle that it is mundane or thinking that I can change the vehicle is wrong. Because in the modern example, you can change your vehicle. Let's say you have a Wagoner car and you don't like it. You can sell it off and buy a Mercedes. But in the material body, it is not like that. You can't change your kshetra. You can make your kshetra better and better. That you can do. Right? Just like we see in the Mahabharata, we see all the Pandavas. Right from childhood, they had tendencies. Correct? Like we see, the first guru of the Pandavas were not grown up. It was the Rishi in the forest. When Pandu died, the Pandavas were taken care, were being taught by some rishis in the forest. And in fact, only when Yudhishthira Maharaj was 13 years old, they came back to Hastinapur. So there what happened was, the childhood itself, the rishis detected the kshetra of the Pandavas. All of them were kshatriyas. But Arjuna was better at bow and arrow, or Bhim was better at mace fighting. Arjuna or Sahadeva Nakul in sword, or Yudhishthira Maharaj in spear. So they had their own little kshetras, even as a kshatriya. And that was developed. You see, Arjuna, even though from childhood he had that natural flair, I can say, for shooting arrows nicely, but he developed that kshetra. Whole life he did that. Even in the forest, 13 years, he was developing his kshetra. He prayed to Lord Shiva, he got Pashupata Astra. He was constantly developing his kshetra. And it's a simple thing, because if the kshetra is not well developed, from where will you render service? To render service, the most natural place to render service is your own kshetra, which can be the body, your psychophysical nature, all that is combined into the understanding of kshetra. Okay. Correct. So on one hand, the kshetra is mundane, yes, it is external, but at the same time, thinking that it is useless or it should be neglected is again faulty. So that's why I quoted from Bhagavad Gita 13.3, where Krishna is saying that to understand kshetra is knowledge, to know what your body is capable of. That is also considered as part of knowledge. Krishna has not counted that as ignorance, please know. Right? So the point is, one second, all right, I have to see how much time I have to do. I don't know if there's something there. Yeah. Yeah, so in the 13th chapter Bhagavad Gita, there is also a very wonderful discussion between Prakriti and Kshetra. You know, that's also a very interesting discussion, because the 13th chapter first verse, Arjuna is asking what is Prakriti, what is Purusha, what is Kshetra, and so on. So let's understand, Prakriti basically means everything else in this world. That means the entire material nature is called as Prakriti. But the Kshetra means one's own field is called as Kshetra. Correct? So I live in a house, let us say, so this is my Kshetra, but all the houses, the entire Pune city, the entire world is called as Prakriti. So there is a particular way in which I interact with Prakriti, and there is a particular way in which I understand and interact with my own Kshetra. Correct? So this Kshetra concept is so all pervading, if you see, in a way, it applies to every living entity. Right, like you know, sometimes as devotees, we take care of cows nicely. And I was once speaking to one person who takes care of cows and he runs a goshala. He was mentioning that every breed of cow also has a particular kshetra. You know, so they run some goshala. So he was telling me, this devotee was telling that, like for example, if you see the gir cows are in Gujarat, correct? So this area suits their climate. In Kerala, if you go, there is another type of desi cow. If you go to the Sahyadri, the mountain areas, there is another type of cow. They are more short in height. The reason they are short in height is, you know, they can climb mountains well and so on. Now, if you exchange, if you bring that cow from the mountain to the tropical climate, or take the cow of the tropical climate and put it on top of the mountain, it doesn't flourish. Why it doesn't flourish? That is Prakriti. We all know that. Because it is removed from its kshetra. Usko kshetra se nikala humne aur dusri jagah dal diya. So flourish hi nahi karega. Correct? It will not flourish. So this is a simple thing. So even if you see farm, you see agriculture, right? There is a kshetra which is meant to grow pulses. And if you put sugar cane over there, just because sugar cane gives money. So sugar cane may give you more money. But that kshetra is not suitable to sugar cane, then you will incur a loss, because you are actually going in a dangerous zone. So if you see this concept of kshetra, it's a very universal concept. It applies not only to human being in terms of our actions or to the devatas, but it applies to almost everything. And the goal of life is, one of the important understanding of this kshetra is how to increase the capacity of the kshetra gradually. So everyone can do that. You can, so as I was telling you about the Pandavas, they slowly over a period of time they improved their own kshetra. They were all kshatriyas from birth. Lekin uspe unhone thoda thoda karke organically improved here. And by the end they were very good at whatever kshetra they were. Correct? Right. So one cannot drastically change, or one cannot do topsy-turvy to the kshetra, but gradually one could improve, and in this way one can contribute to the service of Krishna. Because right, so let's summarize the whole thing today, and then maybe if there are any questions or comments, I'll just take 5 minutes to summarize what we spoke. We were reading today from the fifth canto, chapter 3, Rishabhdev's appearance. And since the Lord is appearing, Rishabhdev, the purport Prabhupada talks about 4.8 Bhagavad Gita, that why the Lord comes to this world. Right? Prabhupada says that the Lord comes to this world for three reasons. That's Bhagavad Gita, Parichitranaya Sadhuna, Vinayasaya Jadushkritam, Dharma Samsthapanarthaya Sambhavami Yuga Yuga. So I just took one theme, Dharma Samsthapanarthaya. So what is trying to establish Dharma? So I related that to the first two words of Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetra. And I tried to say that the Lord comes to this world to establish a Dharma Kshetra. That means a right Kshetra where you can practice Dharma nicely. And I quoted examples, whether you see Matsya Avatar, Varaha Avatar, whether you see even Kurma Avatar, or whether you see Narasimha, whether you see Lord Krishna, whether tomorrow is Vamana Dwadashi. You see any avatar, there will be a connection to Kshetra. Right? Like how we argued about Vamana. So Vamande, why did he come? Because the kshetra of the devatas were taken over by Bali. So if somebody's kshetra is taken over, then uska service hi band ho gaya na, wo kaam hi nahi kar sakta abhi. Unko kahan kaam karega abhi, devta log kya karenge? I mean, you can't tell them that now you will go over. Are aise kaise? What will they do without their work? Their service is gone. And that was the medium, their kshetra, the Indra and everybody, they were ruling the universe, and that is how they were expressing their devotional service to Lord. अभी वो बलि ने आके सब कुछ ले लिया, देन व्हाट आर दे गोइंग टू डू नाउ? सो दैट इज वाई देयर मदर वाज डिस्टर्ब्ड, अदिति. and hence we know that Lord Vamandev came, he cheated Bali, and you know, he gave the kingdom back to the Indra, correct? He, I mean, that is the end of the Vamandev story, that he puts him, and it gives Bali also one kshetra. He tells Bali, abhi to sutal lotne bhai, and next manvantar mein you will become Indra, you know. So in this way the Lord nicely solved that whole issue. So I was saying that based on this example of Vamandev, I tried to say that every avatar, if you see in this day, whenever the Lord comes to this world, it is in a way connected to dharma kshetra. So then yes, we elaborated these two words from Bhagavad Gita, dharma and kshetra. I said dharma is such an amazing terminology. You know, it's not religion, like Prabhupada says many times, it's not Hindu religion, it is Sanatana dharma. So we elaborated on this word dharma by saying that dharma means actions in line with rita. Okay, so there is satya, rita, dharma. So satya means the unmanifested reality, rita means manifested reality, and dharma means to submit to the laws of the manifested reality. Right? So we give you several examples. Just like why getting up in the morning is dharma. Because that's how the rita is. You are supposed to get up before sunrise. If you see, all animals obey the dharma. Like we see all pigeons. Or pigeons, if you see, you know, the daytime they will be roaming around for food. But at night time they all go to their nest. They will not, there is no pigeon suddenly, abhi raat ko bhook lag raha hai karke is running around looking for food. Aisa nahi hoga. Because animals and birds naturally follow dharma. They submit to the laws of nature, the way Srishti has made them. It is only human beings, you know, who don't. Right? So, we know that some human beings will get up in the morning, others will not get up. So dharma means to submit to the laws of nature. Of course, getting up in the morning is a simple example of dharma. There are other examples of dharma. Dharma also means, for example, to take care of your dependents. That is dharma. Because that's how rita, that's how the Srishti is manifested. How is the Srishti manifested? With the idea that somebody superior takes care of their inferiors. Like a mother takes care of the child. That is rita. That is the manifested reality. So, some mother aborts the child. That is adharma. Similarly, a kshatriya means to protect. That is dharma. If a kshatriya like Bhishma, Drona are sitting and watching that Draupadi is being disrobed and they are doing nothing about it, then it becomes adharma. Then we also said that dharma also means to submit to the laws of the world. So the law of the world is everything is temporary. So if you try to make yourself permanent in this world, that is also adharma, because you are going against the laws of the world. That is why Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to become eternal sitting in this body. Ye to adharma ho gaya na, because how can you do that? That is not how Srishti is made. This whole universe is temporary, from Brahma's planet to everything. Abhi yahan par aake tumko eternal kaise kya banna hai? So Hiranyakashipu does adharma. So in this way, first we discuss the word dharma. Right? That is one aspect of the word dharma. Then I focused on the word kshetra. Saying that kshetra means a place where you will act. That place is your house, the body that you are sitting in, the capabilities that you have. That is the capability of your kshetra, right? So whether it is varna or ashram, I have a kshetra and my kshetra has some capability. So first thing, I have to know that. So I quoted from Bhagavad Gita 3.3 that Krishna says to understand kshetra and kshetrajna is knowledge, right? To understand the body and the knower of the body, the kshetra, is Krishna what he calls knowledge. So one should know that. So we discussed like in Ramayana, Hanuman did not know what his kshetra is capable of accomplishing. So Jambavan had to remind him that bhai tu ye kar sakta hai ye kaam, tere your kshetra is capable of doing that, and hence he then immediately remembered because of that person, he did it. So similarly we were saying that so we said that it is not about this kshetra is better, the question is what is your kshetra. So if I am a farmer, you know, it is not that sugarcane crop is better than rice crop. No, my kshetra is capable of producing rice crop, I have to be happy with rice crop. Maybe I can produce better variety of rice, but I cannot suddenly make it sugar cane, because perhaps for sugar cane another type of kshetra is required. Mere kshetra mein sugar cane nahi aayega abhi. But if I am adamant, nahi, mere ko sugar cane nahi chahiye, sugar cane achcha crop hai, rice cane, then you will suffer unnecessarily. So we saw that how that understanding of the kshetra is important. So the kshetra is the place, it is the jati, it is the varna, everything is related to that. It is the crop that you are wearing. So where you are performing your action, that becomes kshetra, the field of activities. Right, as Prabhupada translates the word kshetra in 13.2 Bhagavad Gita. So then we were saying that to rob somebody else's kshetra is adharma. So that is how we discussed dharma kshetra. If you take away somebody else's kshetra, that is adharma. Right? Like the Kauravas had taken over the kshetra of the Pandavas. Like Bali Maharaj took over the kshetra of Indra. Hiranyakashipu did the same thing. हिरण्याक्ष थ्रू द अर्थ इन द गर्भोदक सागर, सबका क्षेत्र छीन लिया हिरण्याक्ष ने, करेक्ट? सो टू टेक अवे क्षेत्र ऑफ पीपल एंड नॉट अलाउ देम टू परफॉर्म इज कंसिडर्ड अधर्म. यू कैन डू दैट. So that is why the one of the reasons the Lord comes. Of course, there are so many reasons the Lord comes. Like the Lord comes to, to like Kunti Maharani very nicely in the Bhagavatam. She says several reasons why she comes, and she says that ultimately the Lord comes to revive the process of chanting His glories, so that we can be attracted to Him and go back to Him. So there are many reasons why the Lord comes, but I am focusing today on this one reason of dharma samstapan. So the Lord comes because Khetra of people have been unnecessarily usurped. And he comes to set that right, right? And that's what I said is the whole fifth canto about, because fifth canto is all talking about kshetra, and we see how these kings are wonderfully dividing their kshetra between their sons and grandsons and everything. And, that is such an important part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where every king is giving a place for his people to perform. And we saw examples like how somebody is born like Rudra, he's asking, "Main kahan par baith ke mera kaam karu?" And Brahma ji says, "You stay here, here, and here, and then you do these activities. And then that person is comfortable." So, like, "Okay, okay, Baba, mere kshetra mil gaya, kaam mil gaya." Now the question is, how you do that in Krishna consciousness? But first, you had to have your kshetra, because without that, you couldn't do anything. And that is why I read from the Srimad Bhagavatam the verse of Vaman Dev. We'll end with this. Vaman Dev, when he comes, he is telling Aditi that, "Oh goddess, I can understand that you want to regain your sons, that is Devatas. And be together with them and worshipping me, and after defeating the enemies in battle, retrieve your abode." Vaman Dev says, because unka abode chala gaya tha, and that had to be retrieved, and that is the immediate reason why Vaman Dev says. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So I don't know whether there is any comment or something.
Rishi, we have some questions for you on the chat. Hare Krishna. Krishna Kishore Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Okay, maybe I'll just take, I don't know what I do now. I think they're timed out also. I'm a little confused.
Yeah, Prabhu, we have
few questions. Prabhu, any suggestion? I think we end, right? Am I on or Yogesham Prabhu?
Hey, they have some questions for you.
Was I audible in the class or I was not audible only?
No, you are audible.
I forgot to ask that.
No, Krishna Prabhu, we can hear you very well.
No, Radhisham Prabhu, didn't
I? We can hear you very well. They have some questions for you.
No, nobody's voice is coming only here.
Oh, you really? Can
hear me now? I don't know whether my voice is also coming.
No, you are muted, I think. Radhisham Prabhu, check it.
He is not connected to audio. He has to connect to his
voice. Haribo.
Prithi, you have to on your speaker.
The lecture was heard or it was not heard?
No, we heard everything.
Okay, so. Social Nimai Prabhu is saying that at least I was heard.
You were heard?
I don't think Radhisham Prabhu or Yugalsham Prabhu is heard. Okay, some people are saying
they heard Prithi.
Okay, I think we should end now, because anyway, technology is not working.
No.
I wanted to say something.
You are able to hear Prithi.
Radhisham Prabhu is audible. Is Radhisham, can others hear Radhisham Prabhu, or is that only I can't hear him?
Type kar raha hai.
Ha, we can now hear Radhisham Prabhu.
Yeah. We can hear now.
Yeah, now we can hear the project. Till now I could not hear only.
Okay. Now ask questions, Radhisham Prabhu.
Okay.
Some questions on the chat. I'm just asking. How Lord Chaitanya established karma in context of today's discussion? You can hear me?
Type, send a message.
I'll just put on the
chat. Problem. My speaker is mute. No, stay on. How I heard Radhisham Prabhu then. Okay, maybe I'll just take one question from the chat and.
Okay, I'm sending question to the chat.
One question right. Maybe, and maybe we'll end because I think we are timed out also. So one devotee asked this question. how can we relate the shloka yasyaham anugrinnani harishe taddanam shane. So one I favor, I take away everything. With today's class of the need of keeping a kshetra. In the story of Avanti Brahman, we see the self-realization dawned on him. Only after he lost everything, including his kshetra. In today's class, I get to understand the importance of kshetra, but this is a contradictory example in scripture. Very good. This is a good question. So I'll just answer this one. So one question has come about, you know, Avanti Brahman losing everything and Krishna saying special mercy means to take everything away. Okay, so let's understand this particular point. So first of all, you know, this special mercy, because it's truly special, it is actually not applicable to everyone that the Lord desires to take away everyone's kshetra. See, this basically happens only at a time when Lord wants to tell you that now your role in the world is over. So I'll just give an example for it, like the Pandavas, if you see. 125 years the Pandavas lived in the world. But for that 125 years, they were doing their activity. But in the end, if you see, when Krishna had disappeared, at that time Arjuna couldn't even protect the queens of Dwaraka. Correct? There is an ordinary person who comes with a stick and, you know, he fights Arjuna off. And when Arjuna tells that to the Pandavas, Yudhishthir Maharaj immediately understands, Hamara samay khatam ho gaya hai. So if you want to call that a special mercy where one's ability and everything is taken away, I think that we shouldn't give that particular aspect of the story importance to such an extent that we write off everything what the Pandavas did for 125 years. Are you understanding? It is not that in childhood only Krishna took away the capability of the Pandavas, saying that abhi Arjun shoot ne karega, Bhima fight ne karega, koi kuch ne karega, sir, mera bhajan karenge, sir. Krishna did not do that. Throughout their time, the whole Bhagavad Gita was to reinstate Arjun in his kshetra. Correct? And that was when Arjuna was 87 years old in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. But at the end of one's life, this understanding came. Pandavas ko samajh mein aa gaya, abhi hum log ka kaam nahi hai duniya mein. So, ordinary aadmi ne bhi humko defeat kar diya. So, let us walk away. So, this particular understanding which is there, you know, about the fact that my kshetra is now redundant, that is not the cornerstone of life. That is one aspect of life which perhaps everybody should also understand at the end. I think I made that point when I was saying about dharma. That you should also know that now you are irrelevant. Irrelevant means what? Abhi mera time ho gaya hai kshetra mein. How long am I going to think that I am the controller of everything in this body? Mera samay ho gaya abhi. Now I should focus on something higher. I should get out. I should plan to pack my bags and move off. Correct? Like Vidura tells Dhritarashtra, just get out like a dog what you are sitting here and eating what Bhima has thrown. So basically, a point aata hai jab aapko samajh mein aana chahiye ki abhi main irrelevant ho gaya, kshetra chhodna chahiye. Right? That is why in Varnashram there is Vanaprastha also. Now, hey, now stage hai jab aap karo. But the thing is, so that is one aspect of life. But what I am trying to say here is, one shouldn't think that is the only thing about life. Correct? So as I was saying earlier, Krishna comes to this world repeatedly to give kshetra. So why did Vamandev come to give the heavenly planets to Indra? The heavenly planets are temporary, right? Indra is also temporary. Why? Because without that he cannot function. It is a fact that at one point of time Indra has to give up his heavenly planet. Oh hey, lekin uska time abhi tak aaya nahi tha. That time had not come for Indra to give up his Swargaloka. Lekin prematurely Bali Maharaj came and, you know, kind of took it away. So that is adharma. So please try to understand. So I'll just end with this. Adharma is you try to take away somebody else's kshetra prematurely. Aisa nahi kar sakte. At the proper time, organically, when the time is over, everybody should leave their kshetra and go, because kshetra is also temporary. Correct? But for that, there is time. It's not that, don't make that the goal of the life when a boy is 15 year old. Ki abhi mere ko kshetra chhodna hai. Abhi nahi ho. At one particular point of time, it will come that you have to give up your kshetra. At that time, be ready. Okay, I think we will end here. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.